Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
What's up, everyone? Welcome in to another episode. So glad you joined us, as always. I'm pumped to have you. I'm even more pumped to have my special guest today because I love this dude. I love his podcast, but he's a first-timer on 2Ps. We've been admiring each other's shows, Daniel, for a couple years, but you've never been on the show, man, so I'm happy to have you. Everyone say hello to Daniel from what is now being called the Movie Journey, formerly the IMDb Journey. What's up, man? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gerald. It's great to be here, finally. We've had a couple conversations back and forth about when we can get this working, and finally got into it, and yeah, I'm super pumped to be here. I love, you love a good top five list, so always ready to come on and have a good banter with you, Gerald. You know, you're one of my faves.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much, and same thing to you and Dean over there. You know, I came on y'all show about, I don't know, about 3 or 4 months ago, I guess, and I got obliterated. I don't know what
to be
all
fair,
about,
a lot of
man.
People do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, wow. But you do the blind voting, so I can't really blame any hometown votes or whatever. But it was a lot of fun, man. So your show's a blast. Why don't you've never been on 2Ps before, so you know we have a lot of regular listeners. So why don't you tell them real quick what you guys do over there, just a little bit about your show?
Yeah, so essentially we started off breaking down the IMDb top 250 list, basically one movie a week, just at random. We go through the whole film, break it down scene by scene. Generally get into a bit of good Aussie banter, hang shit on each other, me and my podcast mate Dean. We also sort of branched out into other things as well. We've created the Pod v Pod, where, like you said, we have other podcast guests on for movie quizzes, movie games, drafts, all these different variety of generally fun time quizzes. And we also, we've branched out into a whole bunch of stuff. Like, we talk about every other movie we've watched as well. We do a bonus episode every week for a very brand new release. We do film tournaments, top five lists, all of it. And you can think of something for a movie variety podcast show, and we're doing it.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, man. What was it with the name change? Just because you kind of went through IMDb's big stuff already, or
no? It was more so we wanted to make the show and the brand our own. We wanted to sort of move away from the actual IMDb name in our actual show name, and we just wanted to kind of create our own little thing.
That's cool, man. I mean, yeah. I love the show. You call whatever the hell you want to. I'm just listening, so
yeah, our content didn't change a single bit. We just wanted to change the name.
Okay, well, I'm into it, man. I like it. I love the show. I'll put all your information in the show notes, and I'll let you tell everybody where to find you at the end on social media and whatnot as well.
Fantastic.
So, Daniel, why don't you tell everyone, man? So we do a top five show here, and we often dive into movies, and we're doing that again this week. What are we counting down this week, brother?
We're going to be counting down the top five movie endings.
Yes. Endings in film, you know, as we're recording this, a couple things, because this is going to come out a little bit later, but we're recording this actually on the night of the Golden Globes. It's happening right now. But also we're recording it the same week that our opening movie scenes came out. Andy and I recorded that one. And a couple fans hit us up on Twitter and said, hey, you know, why don't, because we did opening credit sequences last year. And then, like I said, this week we did opening movie scenes. And a couple fans were like, "What? I can't wait to hear the ending scenes. When are you guys going to do that?" And of course, I had never even thought of it. So I'm like, you're right. That's a great topic. So when you were researching movie endings and closing scenes to film, I mean, how did this research come along for you? Was this a blast? Or was it easy? Was it difficult?
This was pretty easy for me. Like, generally, my best movie endings are obviously endings that left me sitting there just in like shock and awe and wondering, wow, what the hell have I just watched? This finale was just incredible. I'd say three out of my five are generally based on shock endings, and the other two are quite more emotional side. But just any film really that has just stayed with me throughout the 10, 15 years maybe, just when you say, oh, you like that movie? Yeah, how good is that ending? Oh, it's so fantastic. That's really right. What you want to draw to.
Right, I agree, man. I mean, you know, there's some shots in films that will just stick with you forever, and that happens sometimes in the beginning, middle, or end. And on my list, all of these ending scenes, some of them are, I would say probably two of mine would be considered like plot twist kind of endings.
Yep.
So that was not, you know, specifically what it was about for me, but that does make it super memorable when you don't see something coming and then it happens, which happened on a couple of mine that are on my top five. I've also got five honorable mentions. So I have 10 movies and they all just have just stuck with me for so many years, some of them for decades, you know, and they just live in my brain forever. They're just ingrained there. So
yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we're going to count down our top five movie endings, guys. We had originally decided to title the episode Closing Movie Scenes, but I wanted to switch it over to movie endings because I've got a couple that are kind of, I don't want to say drawn out, but they kind of, you know, go out over maybe two or three scenes to kind of end the film. And I think you'll see what I mean when we get there, Daniel. But
cool.
If you're ready, man, I'm going to let you go first. Go ahead and get us started with your number five movie ending. What do you got, man?
All right, my number five film is from 2014. This was actually the film that basically got me into reviewing movies way back then, which basically led me to starting a podcast a couple of years later. It's my favorite film of that year. It's in my top five films of the decade. It is Damien Chazelle's Whiplash.
Nice one. I love this one, man. I do love this. This was in my field of vision, but it didn't make my list. But talk a little bit about it.
I mean, that ending, that entire jazz number at the end. I mean, the whole movie itself is just a fantastic, not only like musical jazz piece, but just the relationship between Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons, and they're bickering, they're back and forth, and their general demeanor between each other, and how it culminates at the end here, where he set him up to fail. And he's ready to walk off the stage like he's defeated. But no, he comes back and he obliterates that drum solo. And you can see like the gradual respect that J.K. Simmons gives to him. Like he's wondering what the hell he's doing. But then once he starts to, you know, push him aside and say, no, I'm doing this. And he goes for it and he gets involved and you see him really up in that tempo. This becomes his tempo. And just, I love the quick little back and forth of their eyes right at the end. Like just that feeling of mutual respect that I feel like they've finally given to each other right here. And then it finally ends off with that big bang of a drum solo and then just cuts. And that's the end of the film. Like, oh, I was sitting in my seat at home, just numb after that. Just like, that was incredible. What an ending to such a fantastic film to begin with.
It really was, man. It really was. It just really put the cherry on the top, man. I mean, that's a great film. Is this your favorite Chazelle picture, would you say?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, are you a musicals guy? I can't remember if I've heard you talk about that on.
There are some musicals I like. It's not my go-to genre, but if, you know, the musical is working well and I'm enjoying the songs and I like the where the characters are progressing and the plot of the story, then yeah, I don't mind a good musical. Yeah.
Well, I was only asking because this is runner-up for me to La La Land as far as his catalog is concerned. And it's so ironic because I don't typically gravitate to musicals, but I absolutely loved La La Land a couple years ago. So that's probably my favorite Chazelle picture, but Whiplash is a close second. And that's a great way to get us started, man. Like you said, a very climactic ending and just an acting powerhouse too by those two guys as well.
So, absolutely.
Great pick, man. All right, so mine's a little bit different. So my number five might be kind of a cliche pick, but I got to be honest, man, I had this one kind of just, you know, and ordering this was really difficult for me too, because like I said, I wanted to get down to 10 movies and then kind of order it the way that I felt gave it the best justice. And this is a personal list, obviously.
Yeah.
And this movie just, it was a plot twist that I didn't see coming. And it introduced me to a filmmaker that I feel like is a great storyteller. And, you know, a lot of people are going to say this was his last good movie, which is unfortunate because it was 20 years ago now. But it's The Sixth Sense from M. Night Shyamalan.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
No, I want you. I mean, I know it's a divisive movie. Now, I will say real quick that the rewatchability on The Sixth Sense is very low. Like, I feel like I saw it a couple times when it first came out and I loved it, but I haven't really revisited it a lot. It's not that I dislike it, you know, since then. I just, obviously, you know the spoiler and you know what's happening. And it was cool to see it a second and third time to kind of try to pick up on those hints throughout the movie. So that was cool.
Yeah,
but it's not like a Blu-ray I would throw on today unless I was showing it to my kids or something like that.
Okay.
But the impact that the twist had on me at the time in the late 90s when this came out, you know, Bruce Willis actually giving it an effort, which, you know, he gets criticism for not doing that a lot. actually turned in a good performance here. You know, you had a good child performance from a young Haley Joel Osment. I absolutely love Toni Collette, so anything she's in is going to raise it for me right away just by her being in it.
Yep.
But I just love the plot twist, man. I didn't see it coming, and it was so inventive. And I don't know if I was an idiot for just not getting it, but I didn't see it till it happened. And I don't think we're going to give away spoilers for a 20-year-old movie, but I was just kind of floored when it happened. And you don't get that a lot, especially in spoiler culture that we live in today.
Yeah,
the Sixth Sense did it for me. I have fond memories of going to see it with my grandmother, mm-hmm. and her and I saw it in the theater, and we were both just like, you know, jaw open, agape when the plot twist came, and just remembering having the memories of that, and then this movie also being one of the kind of pivotal films in pop culture in the last 20 years or so. I had to throw it in my top five and give it a little love, man. So The Sixth Sense is it for me. So go ahead. What were you going to say, buddy?
No, I was going to say, I've only seen the film once, and it was way back in the day. I actually watched it when I was in like a year 12 or something for high school, and it was in my media class, and the teacher put it on. It was our film we were going to be studying for that 3 months or so. And it was so hinting at this thing that was coming up. He's like, oh, you got to keep watching. It gets something happens here. And literally like three or four of us in the class are like, is Bruce Willis dead? And he's just like, no, maybe. And we're like, yeah, you just ruined it. Because I didn't know about it at the time. So when he was just hinting at something that was going to happen, and then it happened, it was like, oh, okay. Like, it wasn't a big, whoa. Like, if he just shut his mouth, we might have had a big revelation
right,
here.
Right.
So, yeah, the ending never really hit me as hard as it, like, it would for someone who didn't know it was coming. And I never went and revisited the movie again. So, yeah, that's. I mean, it's a great movie. Like, from what I remember, yeah, I really enjoyed it still. But, yeah, the ending didn't have that, you know, that snap factor for me.
And that's interesting that you said that because, you know, we're talking about movie endings. And if you know about that twist, then it's not going to be anything to you. Do you know what I mean?
So it's going to lessen the impact.
Exactly. If you like read it somewhere or somebody told you, then that ending is not even going to matter to you. So I get that. Coming from my perspective and my grandmother who I saw it with, we had no idea. So we're just like, holy shit, that was an amazing plot twist.
And like you said as well, Gerald, with the like basically the introduction of social media now, like it's so hard to avoid some of this stuff sometimes. Like you could honestly be actually avoiding it and you'll still manage to find out about it sometimes. Like it's hard. But and you know, way back in 1999, around that time when it came out, it would have been a lot easier to avoid some of that stuff. So I can see why you got a chance to completely miss out on all these spoilers and go in and just have the, you know, great experience with the film.
Right. Yeah. So I'm a little bit of a Shyamalan apologist as well, because, you know, he's had definitely had peaks and valleys in his career, but I do think he's a great storyteller, and I think he has an imaginative eye, you know, to filmmaking, and I do like his style of filmmaking. I just wish he would be more consistent.
Yeah, I really, really love Unbreakable and Signs.
I did too. Oh, Signs I loved, yeah. I do too. I mean, he's got some great films, but then he's got some big duds too.
Oh, yeah, so. Massive turds.
So I would love a little more consistency, but I think Sixth Sense is kind of what introduced him to the world too. So
yeah, for sure.
All right, that's my number five, man. And we're back over to you for your number four, buddy.
All right, we're going a little further back in time here, around the mid-90s. This is one of my all-time favorite films. You can tell what it is, even if you haven't seen the film, just by this one simple line: "What's in the box? What's in the box?"
Nice.
Seven for sure. Oh man, I fell in love with this movie the very first time I watched it. It's such an amazing like crime mystery drama that just the pieces get put together as it goes along. But then it, you know, something happens about two thirds of the way through the film that just subverts your expectations. So like a massive 180, and then the way it all culminates with that scene out in the bush, like the Deadlands basically. And you just would not expect that to happen if you haven't seen or heard anything about the film, because of like the star power of this film. Like, that's not going to happen. Oh, okay, this has actually happened and it's insane. And you just don't know what the reaction and, you know, the cause and effect is going to be because of this action that has happened. I can't believe I'm talking like this. Like, I'm not spoiling a film that's, 25 years old now?
I know.
35 years old?
I know. No, it's not 35 years old, is it?
Or yeah, it
25,
is. Isn't it?
25.
Oh, yeah, 25. Yeah, I'm getting my years wrong. Yeah. 25 years old. It's I'll keep the spoiler free, but anyone who hasn't seen it, my
it's
God,
okay.
You got to see it. Nah, it's amazing, Gerald.
It's amazing. I meant it's okay to spoil it, is what I meant.
Yeah, exactly.
It's coming up on my list, so I don't want to dive too deep into it right now, but I absolutely agree with the pick, and it's one of my favorite movies.
Do you hear me, Detective? I'm trying to tell you how much I admire you and your pretty wife.
What?
Tracy.
What'd you fucking say?
It's disturbing how easily a member of the press can purchase information from the men in your precinct.
What the fuck? Put your gun down!
I visited your home this morning, after you'd left. I tried to play husband. I tried to taste the life of a simple man.
Pull it away!
It didn't work out. So, I took a souvenir. Her pretty head.
Elf!
What the fuck is she talking about?
Give me your gun.
What's going on over there?
Put the gun down.
I saw you with the box. What was in the box?
Because I envy your normal life.
Put the gun down, David.
It seems that envy is my sin.
No, what's in the box?
Not until you give me the
what's
gun.
What's in the fucking box?
Give me the gun.
He just told you.
You lie! You're a fucking liar! David. Shut up!
That's what he wants. He wants you to shoot him.
No! No!
You tell me.
That's not true. That's not true.
Become vengeance, David.
Oh, she's all right. You tell me.
Become wrath.
Tell me she's all right!
You made her a suspect, David.
No!
Just throw it all away, you know.
No!
I'll talk a little bit about it here in a few minutes, but I love Seven. I love David Fincher. So great pick, man.
Fantastic. Thank you.
So my number four, Sixth Sense kind of teeter totters between being horror. This one is definitely horror. In fact, not only is it horror, it reinvented horror and reinvigorated the genre also about 25 years ago.
Okay.
And because of this movie and because of Wes Craven, horror has flourished. So Scream from 1996 is my number four.
That cool. movie Good ending. Pick.
Now, this is the only film in the 10 movies that I have listed for tonight's show, Daniel, it's the only film that was also in my opening movie scenes.
Ah.
So that tells you how much of a Scream lover I am. perhaps a little biased, but it's one of my favorite opening scenes in film. Of course, the death of Drew Barrymore in the beginning, who's your marquee name.
Yep.
And now we're talking about the movie ending. Again, guys, this is a 25-year-old movie. If you haven't seen it, please fast forward. But again, we're talking about a plot twist, right? So this is something that I didn't see coming. You know, Scream was a very cool movie, right? It was like cool and hip, and it had a lot of the lingo of the time and the music of the time and these young kids that were cool, and it just felt like a cool movie, right? And am I the only one that thinks that, or does that make sense what I'm saying?
No, yeah, it absolutely does.
So the end of this movie, man, I absolutely love Matthew Lillard in this film, and finding out that him and Billy are together, and it's kind of a dynamic duo that's been terrorizing the town there in Sydney. I didn't see it coming, man. Again, just like Sixth Sense, it kind of dropped a bomb on me.
Yeah, I imagine it would be another film here that kind of subverts your expectations for, like, all those previous horror films. It's really just about the one killer going around doing it each movie. And then when you come into this film and you find out, oh, there's actually two of them going around. That's how they managed to evade the the idea that, you know, it couldn't be this person because he was here at this time, and et cetera, et cetera. It was a great little refreshing twist at the end there.
Right. And I love when Stu comes in with the voice changing box and he goes, surprise, Sydney.
Fantastic.
I love that part, man. It's awesome. And she turns around like she's going to him for help, and then he says that to her. I don't know. It's just really cool. And I love him and Billy's kind of banter and kind of like love-hate relationship. And there's a lot of comedy mixed into the scene and a lot of terror at the same time because you feel kind of scared for Sydney and for the other characters. But it's fun, right? Scream was weird because it was like you were scared, but it was like you were happy to be scared. You know?
It was definitely like a watered down sort of horror film that was a bit light, but it was also genuinely scary and had some solid gore in it, but it was also playing on those horror tropes that you'd got to know so well over the course of, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s and heading into the 90s, and they really, really turned it up, and it was a great result.
Awesome, man. So, and we did this one for a trivia question on your show.
Yeah.
And were you the one that knew them all, or was that Dean?
No, Dean doesn't know shit. This was all me.
Okay, that was you. I thought it was you. What did I ask you? I asked you how many victims there were.
How many people were killed in Scream.
I feel like it was seven.
It was seven.
Yeah. So there you go. A little trivia for you. There were seven deaths in Scream. All right, so that's my number four, man. Scream from 1996, which heads us over to you for your number three.
Okay, you did mention this earlier. Now, this, I'll just go ahead and say it. It's Damien Chazelle's La La Land.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, I love Whiplash. I think Whiplash is a better film, but I think La La Land has the better ending overall.
That's divisive, by the way. I guess you know that, but that ending.
Yeah.
Because I've talked about this movie on my show on a couple occasions. We did movie musicals, and I named it, and then it came up when we did Oscar winners. And I don't know. People are a little. I was surprised to find that out, to be honest, because I love the ending.
This ending blew me away.
Go ahead and talk about it real quick. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've done a breakdown of La La Land on our show, and We spoke about this ending for a good 5-10 minutes, just going back and forth over it. But this whole epilogue of, you know, they basically had to break up to, you know, to pursue their dreams. They've chosen their dreams over their relationship, like a mutual agreement. And when you come back a couple of years later and they've met their dreams, they've moved on. Like Mia is a massive superstar actress now, and Seb owns his own jazz bar. And, you know, she stumbles across it, she realizes where she is, and then they get that glance between each other, and he starts to play their song that they grew up, that they got their relationship together with. And then that massive epilogue, like this old Hollywood style ending where you just see what their future could have been like, what their whole life could have been like together, going through everything. And it's pure, like the music as well is just on point throughout this whole scene. I was, again, numb just watching this 10-minute scene there of their love and relationship and what could have happened. And then when it cuts back to them and you see like sadness in their face as well, but also still recognition, like, you know, we've done this, we've moved on, we've got our lives now. And they give it each other that nice little smile and a nod, and then they move on with their lives. Like that's the reality. Like that's what they chose and that's what they got. That's what they could have had, but that's what they didn't do.
Right, right. And the music that's incorporated into that scene too is so powerful.
Yeah.
Because it's a callback to their relationship earlier in the film.
Yeah.
And you know, he played it for her because she was there, and you know, they're the only two that know that. And of course us as the viewer, as the audience.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a tremendous connection that those two people had. And I felt like that was a great send-off for that connection, but also a great, just like, kind of like the memories that were being shared between the two of them, and we were a part of it.
Like even little subtle bits, like there was, I remember the part where you see like those big green round shrub trees in just a small little scene, like in the background. And then in the epilogue, you see them like dancing in between them, in and out. Like they know that in their mind, like it's barely there for us, but because that's part of their journey when they were together, it's a big part of like their dream.
Right, right. I love that movie, man. I you know, with you naming Whiplash, I didn't expect two Damien Chazelle films on your
list. Well, he's the man at the moment. He knows how to end a film.
He does, man. That is a good one. You're right. For some reason, I didn't think about it for movie endings. I don't know why, but I do love the ending to that film. And like I said, it's one of my favorite films of the last few years. We actually just did our top 10 of the decade, and I named that like my 7 or 8 of the decade, that movie. Yeah. So I do love that film. Great movie, man. All right, so good pick. Number 3 for you was La La Land. So my number 3, I'm going to name it, and then I'm going to make sure you've seen it, Daniel.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it, I'll be very generic. If you have seen it, I'll do a spoiler warning for the listeners, because it is a fairly recent film. It just came out last year. It's a film called First Reformed.
I have seen it.
Okay, you've seen it.
Yes.
So guys, if you have not seen First Reformed, it's a 2018 picture. Fast forward, because I don't want to ruin it for you, because the ending, I feel like, is definitely the best quote-unquote scene in this movie, if you just had to pick out one scene. What did you think of First Reformed before I dive into the movie ending?
I was very middling on it. I feel like I need to go back and rewatch it to really appreciate the film in general. But when I watched it and it ended, I was okay. Yeah, that was good. Good performances, and it definitely had a strong message. I didn't get the film as much as I feel like I should have, or I didn't get into the film as much, I guess, and popped it back on the rewatch list, and I haven't got back to it since.
Right. Well, that makes sense. I mean, this movie is the definition of slow burn.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, it is a slow burn of a film. Paul Schrader's the director, who's also famous for The Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, as far as the writer, I mean, and he's also the writer on First Reformed. So, you know, this movie's basically Taxi Driver, but with a priest. In that role. It's a very similar arc to the film. But at the end of the film, and Amanda Seyfried is also in this film, and Ethan Hawke plays the main character, who, like I said, is a priest. And he's running this small town church that are having this big event, and he's going to be speaking at the event. But he's kind of been losing his mind a little bit throughout the course of the movie, and he's kind of been taking a descent into kind of like just mental instability. And we know that as the audience, but the other people that work with him do not know that, but we do. And anyway, he's developed this plan, and again, spoilers, guys, spoilers for the end of this movie, but he's developed this plan to basically wear a bomb, like a suicide vest, and blow himself up at this event. Okay.
Hmm.
So he is, while that's going on, he's been kind of garnering a love affair with Amanda Seyfried's character, and they've kind of fallen in love with each other, and she's really the only person that he cares about at this point. And right when he's getting ready to walk into the church to do this deed, he sees her showing up to the event when she had promised that she was not coming. So he kind of cancels his whole plan, And the movie really, at that point, submits us to what we just don't know. And Paul Schrader, the filmmaker, has said that he doesn't even know. So you have to kind of, is it real? Are we seeing what Ethan Hawke is really doing at that point? Or are we witnessing some type of a dream?
Yeah, from my memory, wasn't there a bit involving the pouring the Drano in the whiskey? And that was hinted throughout the film as well. I know there's a big theme of us basically destroying the world, like God's world that he's created, and that's what's driven him down to madness.
Yep. Yeah. That's exactly right. And in the last few minutes of this film and what you're talking about, there's a lot of imagery that sticks with you. And you just mentioned one of them, which is the Drano going in the whiskey.
Yeah.
So, Paul Schrader, I've seen interviews with him where he's like, I don't know, you tell me. Like, he doesn't know. and he wrote it, you know what I mean? But it's either, you know, Ethan Hawke killed himself and he's seeing her when, you know, because she comes back. Okay. So he cancels his plan to bomb the place. She comes into the little like office area that's adjacent to the church where he is drinking this Drano, supposedly. Yeah. And they embrace. They have this long embrace. He's wrapped himself in barbed wire.
Yeah. I remember
which
that.
Which they show that in the graphic scene. And they're embracing, they're kissing, and it's a very like serene, beautiful moment. But is he dead? Is it heaven? Is he dead? Is he on the gates of heaven? Is this the last thing he's thinking about before he dies? Or is she really there? I don't know. I mean, I really don't know, and I like that I don't know. I like that movies when they're ambiguous like that. And that ending was powerful, man. I mean, that was, by the way, this was an acting clinic by Ethan Hawke. The fact that he didn't get nominated that year, it's just crazy to me, man. I mean, it was definitely the performance of his career. And it's funny because I do like this movie a lot. It was a really, really good movie, but I think this scene really stands out and it really is powerful, especially when you take the ambiguity into account, because I love when movies like make you think and you walk out of the theater asking your friends what they thought and it's different from what you thought and you debate it for years. You know what I mean? And like I said, there's something to be said for it when the writer of the film is going, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he was dead or not.
I also feel like he would go ahead and say that, because if he goes and says what it's about, then that closes off all the talk. Like, that's the discussion over. Like, if he leaves it open, like, he probably does know what it's about, but if he's going, I don't know, you tell me. And that just, like you said, years and years of discussion about the film, and it keeps the film, like, fresh in your mind.
Well, I would urge you to rewatch it, and just, you can pick out little bits and pieces as it leads up to that climax. And I've watched it twice, you know, and on the second viewing, I appreciated it a lot more. You know, obviously the ending didn't hit me as much as it did the first time, but just the movie as a whole, I appreciated on the second watch a lot more, because the first time around, I was like, because I'm okay with cinema. I love cinema. I don't care if it's a slow burn or if it's like action packed, you know, whatever, I'll enjoy it. But I remember the first time around going, okay, what's going on here? Like, what? Who's doing what? When's something going to happen? Mm-hmm. And then the last 10 minutes, of course, is a great climax. But if you watch it back and you kind of know what you're looking for, it's very enjoyable. So I would say give it another visit if you're so inclined. Yeah. Do you know if Dean has seen this one yet?
Dean saw it as well. I think he was about the same opinion as me. Like, he liked a couple of things about it, but I think a couple of things went over his head. And I think both of us actually mentioned that this would probably be one of the top three from that year we would rewatch. Well, like, we wanted to rewatch to get a better understanding of. And I know this year coming up, I'm basically going to be trying to catch up on a lot of the films from each of the years from the last decade, so I can try and get more of a definitive best films of the decade list. So I think I can pop that on in terms of rewatching that film for that year, just to see what I missed, and you know, if it's really, you know, the film that everyone's talking about.
Yeah, it's just underappreciated, man, and underseen, really. And like I said, it just, I don't know, it missed out on the award circuit. Ethan Hawke didn't get as much love as I thought he would. It's a beautiful film in terms of the technical achievements.
Well, you know what it's like, Gerald. There's no superheroes in it. There's no explosions, so no one's going to go see it, are they?
I know. Oh, I mean, what the hell? You're right, though. You're right. But yeah, we're talking about endings, and I mean, that to me was a very powerful and ambiguous kind of WTF ending. You know,
oh, fantastic.
And it was just powerful, man. So it stuck with me. It's only been a year since I saw it, but I loved it. So
nice.
That's my number three. Beauty. And we're up to our runner ups, man. What's your number two, buddy?
Okay, my one and two went back and forth for a while here. Like, I think when we came up with the idea of endings, this was the one that popped into my head straight away. Like, this is on my list for sure. Wasn't too sure where it was going to be. And then after, you know, a little back and forth, I landed on number two. So both of these films are basically for shock value, I guess you could say. And I'm gonna spoil these films. They're decades old now, so
please do. Yeah.
So my number two is The Revelation of Kaiser Soze in The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, it's a good one. That's some honorable mentions.
Yeah, and I feel like this one gave me that whole, wait, what the hell was that? What did I just watch? And it made me want to go back and watch it. But the thing is, when I was watching the film, I was like, yeah, this is good. I said, you know, nice little crime drama, you know, a bit of mysteries here. And then when that happened, it perked me up. I'm like, whoa, holy shit. How is that possible? What has even happened here? And I went back and rewatched the film immediately after it finished. As soon as it finished, I wound the old VHS back. That's what I did. I rewound it back to the start and I watched it again, really focused and intent on seeing all these little clues that had come through. And man, it blew me away on a rewatch. That ending, the way it's edited and paced together, the little flashes of the hints that you've missed along the way, the fact that, you know, you finally realize this is a broken linear piece here. Like this is, what do you call it? Broken narrative.
Narrative.
Yeah. That's,
I,
yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's all coming from, you know, verbal kin from Kaiser Soze. So, and what you're watching isn't true at all, but you think it is because it's on the screen. And I love how they did that. And when you see like the little bits of editing and cutting back and forth, seeing what you thought was real, and then it cuts to what is actually real, like it was actually a different person doing it, and it blew me away. And when you get that shot of his, you know, of the gimp leg, you know, coming straight and walking perfect, and the hand crackling back while he takes, you know, takes a cigarette and, you know, scurries off into the day and you never see him again. And oh, it still gives me tingles and chills when I watch it.
Because you're stupid, Verbal. Because you're a cripple.
What I want to know is who's the gimp.
You know the whole fucking time.
If he comes up for anything, he's going to get rid of me.
But I'm sure Keaton is dead.
I can't feel my legs, Kaiser.
First thing I learned on the job, you know what it was? How to spot a murderer.
Tell me you got the cripple in there from New York.
Yeah.
He mentioned Kaiser Soze.
Who?
After that, my guess is you'll never hear from him again.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. Like that, he's gone.
I could see that, man. It's going to be in my honorable mentions. It made my top 10, but not my top 5. I think one of the reasons maybe it didn't crack my top 5 is because for some, I don't know why, and I'm ashamed of myself, I haven't seen this movie in so long, man.
Well, you got to rewatch it.
I need to rewatch this movie. I love it, though. I love it. I remember Benicio del Toro awesome in this movie. Just so good in that movie, man. So quirky, you know?
Yeah,
Really a standout in that film.
Definitely stands out with his accent.
Oh, man. Well, The Usual Suspects got your boy Spacey in it. How you feel about that whole thing? That's a shame, right?
I don't care about that. I mean,
don't care about that.
you got to separate the artist from all that. And, you know, 90s Spacey is pristine. He has got some amazing films.
You know, I agree. And this has come up on the show a couple times. We're talking about American Beauty and some other stuff. And I don't think a film should be condemned on the whole because of one person's possible whatever, you know.
Exactly.
So that's what American Beauty is, a masterpiece. You know, when that came up when we did our Best Picture winners, and I was like, I'm going to put it on here because it's an amazing film.
Yep.
And this was the reason I say that is because this was like right when the controversy broke out or whatever. So
yeah,
it was a taboo thing to kind of praise him, if you will. But but anyway, like you said, I mean, the artist is the artist, and personal life can sometimes be shitty. You know what I mean? So
yeah, you're watching films. You got to focus on the film, basically. You got to try and remove that real world factor from it.
Right. You got the power out. With that being said, you got the powerhouse of Spacey and Bryan Singer on that film.
I know. This is a hard one to do it sometimes.
Oh, man. I just thought of that. But okay. All right. So that's your number two, man. It's a good pick. It's my honorable mention. So my runner up, and I want to say, Daniel, that you and I actually talked about or mentioned this film when I came on your show.
Okay.
Also, much like Scream earlier. One of my favorite films of all time, and yes, the ending too. In fact, when our buddies Paul and Wayne did their best films of all time, this was number 3 on my list. So this is my number 3 film of all time. It's the last film I saw in the theater with my father, so I have a personal connection to it as well. But the ending of this film, chills and goosebumps every single time. Going on 30 years old now. In a couple years, this will be its 30th anniversary. But it's the masterpiece of Clint Eastwood's catalog, Unforgiven from
1992. Okay, that's a choice. I cannot really remember this film, honestly. We were talking about First Reformed being one of the films I need to rewatch. I think Unforgiven is the number one film I need to rewatch.
Unforgiven, I mean, I don't know how else to say it, man. It's a 10 out of 10 masterpiece film. And much like we were talking about with La La Land earlier in musicals, I'm not a big fan of Westerns. I don't really... My dad was a huge fan of Westerns, and, you know, he passed away in 96, but, you know, when I was young and I was growing up, he was always watching these old, you know, Clint Eastwood Western films. And I mean, I would watch them with him, but I was never like sitting there going, wow, this is amazing. But Unforgiven was just different. I mean, it was, you know, it's a story about, I mean, Clint Eastwood was broken. You know, he plays William Money in the film, and he's basically like a Billy the Kid type outlaw who has this notorious life and notorious career. And he's broken down. He's old. He's trying to raise his kids now on his farm. And he obviously doesn't have the same murderous genes, and he doesn't have the same, you know, killer instincts that he had when he was a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And the film plays on that narrative throughout the whole 2 hours, where he's trying to get away. He's just trying to run away from his past throughout the whole movie, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be that, you know, image of what he was. He's ashamed of it. He just is very guilty because of it. You know, there's stories that are told throughout the film about him murdering women and children, and he's just ashamed of that.
Yeah.
But that's what comes along with his reputation, you know what I mean? And the ending of this movie, so throughout the course of the film, they drink whiskey all the time, right, in the Old West?
Yeah.
And this is in the 1880s, I want to say. And there's often times throughout the movie where his friends, which, by the way, Morgan Freeman plays an awesome supporting role in this, we'll be offering him whiskey. And there's a point in the movie where he's become ill, and they, of course, offer whiskey to cure it. I don't know, I guess that was the medicine. And he won't drink it because he says, you know, my wife cured me of drinking and wickedness. I don't touch it anymore. Okay. Hmm. So that's going on throughout the film. He's trying to escape his kind of like murderous reputation. So at the end of the movie, spoilers for a nearly 30 year old movie, Morgan Freeman, who's his best friend and only real companion in the world, has been killed by Gene Hackman's character, who's ultimately the villain in the film, who won the Academy Award for this. Is amazing. And he snaps. I don't know how else to put it. Clint Eastwood's character kind of snaps. And when he finds out that they killed Morgan Freeman, he grabs the whiskey bottle from the guy that's telling him and starts chugging it.
Yeah.
And he'd been staying away from it the whole movie. And the lady's telling him what they said to Morgan Freeman and why they killed him. And, you know, they were telling stories of who you are. And he started telling him that, you know, you used to kill women and children and you robbed this train. You did all this stuff. And then Clint Eastwood's like, and that didn't scare little Bill, did it? And there, and she's like, no, not really. And so he rides into town that night. And do you remember the end of this movie?
Vaguely.
All right. Well, I mean, to make a long story short, sorry, too late, I guess, but he rides into town and comes up on them in the saloon where they're having their like celebration, basically, for killing this guy and catching one of the bandits. And he just has a shotgun and takes out probably 15 guys in the saloon and just gets his redemption and revenge for his friend's death. And as he's leaving, and it's pouring down rain, it's a beautifully shot film. The cinematography is amazing. The set design's great. It's pouring down rain. He's wearing his cowboy hat. He turns around and he says, I want you to give Ned a proper burial. I'm going to come back and check. And if you don't bury him, I'm going to come back and kill every one of you sons of bitches. And then he rides off into the... And it literally fades to black as his horse rides off into the darkness.
He went south yesterday. He ain't dead.
They killed him. I thought you knew that.
Nobody killed Ned. He didn't kill anyone. He went south yesterday. Why would anybody kill Ned? Who killed him?
Little Bill. The Bar T boys caught him, and Little Bill, he beat him up. He was making him answer questions and beating him up, and then Ned just died. They got a sign on him, says he was a killer.
They got a sign on him?
In front of Greeley's.
A sign on him in front of Greeley's. These questions Little Bill was asking. What kind were they?
About where you and him was.
Then what?
A cowboy come in saying he killed Quick Mike in the shithouse at the Bar T.
So Little Bill killed him for what we done, huh?
Not on purpose. But he started hurting him worse, making him tell stuff. First Ned wouldn't say nothing. And then Little Bill hurt him so bad, he said who you was. He said how you was really William Money out of Missouri. And little Bill said the same William Money that dynamited the Rock Island and Pacific in 69, killing women and children and all. And Ned said he'd done a lot worse than that. Said he was more cold-blooded than William Bonney. And how if he hurt Ned again, he was gonna come kill him. Like he killed a U.S. Marshal in 70.
That didn't scare little Bill, did it?
No, sir.
Give me your Schofield.
What for, Will?
Give it to me.
Yeah, sure. You go on, keep it. I'm never gonna use it again. I don't kill nobody no more. I ain't like you, Will.
And everybody's just kind of watching this legendary, you know, Billy the Kid type character ride off into the darkness, you know, and it's awesome, man. I mean,
I'm picturing it with the gruff Clint Eastwood accent as well when you say that.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Absolutely. It's his best movie. It's his best work. He was the director on it. He was the lead actor in it. Just a tremendous piece of filmmaking. I would definitely urge you to give it a rewatch as soon as possible. But that's my runner-up, man. Nice. I know you don't have a lot of commentary on it because you don't remember it that well. But
nah. Well, it is in the top 250, and I do get to choose a movie every once in a while from that list. So I think that, yeah, I might have that coming up soon because I've been meaning to watch it again. And yeah, what better time than now?
Yeah, sorry to pine over it, but it's my number three movie of all time. And, you know, the ending was awesome. I got to see it with my dad in the theater before he passed, which is great. So it's my number two, man. Unforgiven. And can you believe it, man? We're up to our number ones.
I know.
You already mentioned mine, so a little bit. Let's get yours first, man. What's your number one movie ending, Daniel?
Well, my number one overall is another film that basically, the ending just was another big twist ending, and it blew my socks off, this film. Like I say, out of these five films, this is the least overall in terms of quality, but the ending is far and away the best for me. I'm talking about the 2004 horror film Saw.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
My God.
Wow. I did not see this coming, brother. This, I love the, especially the original. I love the Saw films, but the first one's a classic, man. Go for it.
I saw this film at the cinema. Back in 2004 was probably my biggest year for just going to see films at the cinema. Like I'd get a chance to see everything I could. And I went and saw Saw with a bunch of friends and I was like, yeah, okay, this is good. I don't mind it. It's, you know, a nice little horror film. And then when that ending hit, when he gets up off the floor and that music just crescendos higher and higher and it's that slow-mo build and I'm just sitting there going, what is happening? This is unreal. And I mean, we're talking about actual final shots. That silhouetted shot of him closing the door on him saying game over and the scream you hear afterwards as it, the music stops and it fades to black and the credits come up. I sat in the cinema, just my entire body was numb throughout that whole credits. I didn't move that entire credit scene, just of what I'd witnessed, that whole scene building up, everything just mixed perfect together. So much so that I went and saw that film, I think it was six more times with other people just to get their reactions, just to see their reactions to that ending. Right, it was that, it had that much of an impact on me. I wanted to go see the, the film was very good and I really enjoy it. But man, when it gets to that last like 6 minutes, I was just like bug eyed. I was like, let's see what they're going to say. Let's see what they're going to act like. And it's fantastic. Like I cannot get over how well they did that.
Yeah, it's funny. That's my son's into this thing now, namely with Star Wars, but he's doing this thing where he likes to watch the reactions to scenes and trailers and stuff. And it says something when you want to see people's reaction almost more than you want to see the scene again, you know?
Yeah.
Because you remember how it was the first time you saw
it. Exactly.
It's almost like you wish you could have a hidden camera on everybody's face when they're watching it. But
and I still get numb watching it. Like when I put it on to watch and that scene comes on, like, here we go. And I think it has more to do with this, the music that was playing. That music just hits me hard. And the way they shot that whole thing, the slow-mo build up and everything, it gets me every time.
Yeah, that's a really good one, man. It wasn't on my radar for the list for whatever reason because I'm a horror junkie too. But good pick, man. I'm glad that horror got some love at the number one spot there for you.
Bit weird for me since I'm not a horror guy. I get the number one horror spot for the endings.
I know. Well, that's cool, man. So Saw is your number one. I didn't see that coming either. I would not have guessed that in a million years. I would have lost that bet if I had put a bet down on that one. But Saw is Daniel's number one. My number one, Daniel also chose for his number four, and that's a movie called Seven.
Nice.
David Fincher. You know, man, I mean, come on. I started college in the fall of 94, and I had a roommate and his name was Bob, and we're still friends on social media and stuff. We keep up. But him and I, you know, there was a local theater on campus that we used to go check out movies pretty much every week, to be honest. And one of the first movies that him and I shared together that I went to see four or five times was Pulp Fiction in 94.
Oh, yes.
And I have vivid memories of that. And then the second movie that him and I went to see over and over again, we saw it for like 2 months straight every weekend, was Seven by David Fincher, because we, you know, this is in 95, right? So you can't, I mean, you could, but we didn't have time to, you know, be researching and stuff, because, you know, online wasn't nearly as prominent as it is today in the internet. So we were going back to catch little things, and I really fell in love with that style of filmmaking that David Fincher has stuck with throughout his career, which is a very gritty and dark, kind of ominous, you know, lens that he shoots his films through.
Yeah.
And this was the perfect subject matter for that. I mean, The Seven Deadly Sins, we talk about Kevin Spacey again, playing kind of the antagonist at the end, which I thought he did beautifully as John Doe. But the end of this movie, man, was just a, like, mindfuck, because you're sitting there kind of rattled at the end of it, and you're wondering what happened, and you go and you see it again and again and again, you put the pieces together. But on the first watch, it really does hit you like a ton of bricks. And if you can kind of put yourself in Brad Pitt's character's shoes there, and how Somerset must have felt kind of being a mentor to this guy too.
Oh, yeah.
It's an emotional ending. It's a tragic ending, especially for one particular character. Wasn't a box. And like you said, I mean, that line's going to live on in cinema now forever. Box, you know, and Brad Pitt, kind of the way he's kind of screaming that, but he does such a good job acting in that scene, man. You feel that emotion. Oh man. It's just,
The choice that when he's being told, like, you know, spoilers, here we go. Big spoilers for this. When he's told, like, if you kill him, he will win. He will complete his seven deadly sins. Like he's already got the envy because he envies their life. And that's why he did that. And now he's basically trying to get Brad Pitt to become wrath, to kill him. Do this and I win. And you just see the torture on Brad Pitt's face, that, oh God, as he's, you know, he keeps pulling the gun back up to his face, and then he drops it down like, no, what do I do? And then it's a really a quick little blink and you miss it. There's like a one scene flash of Gwyneth Paltrow. Mm-hmm. And that like goes through his head. And then that's when you see, this is what he's going to do. And you see Kevin Spacey, he knows what's happening. And then bang, the gunshot, and down he goes. And you're like, after all that, you're just like, holy shit, this is incredible.
Yep. It's just an emotional thing, man, at the end of that movie. And then when it ends so abruptly, which I appreciate when movies do that. I don't like when they drag the ending on too long. Like, you know, you had your kind of holy shit moment.
Yeah, you want to stop it as quick as possible. Like, let them sink. Let that moment sink in. Like, that's the last thing you want them to think about.
Right. And then the awesome score that was done by Trent Reznor comes on, and you just kind of sit there. And I did. I mean, the first couple times I saw this movie, I just sat there like, holy shit. you know, kind of like Brad Pitt was in the scene. Like, oh, God. Yep. No, you know. But yeah, I mean, you talked about it earlier, and I wanted to mention it now. It's stuck with me for, like you said, 25 years now, as definitely the most impactful movie ending that I've seen in the cinema. Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey in his prime in the mid-90s. And just a great plot twist. Just so memorable, man. So that's my number one. So we had a crossover there on Seven, which I'm glad if we're going to cross over on any movie, it was my number one. So I like that. So nice. We're going to head over to social media. And, you know, we actually have a little clip that says, what's in the box for our suggestion box. So maybe spoiler alert, that was going to be on my list. But before we do that, I've got five honorable mentions to round up my top 10. Did you have any honorable mentions you want to just give a shout out to there, Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned First Reform as an ambiguous ending. I had an ambiguous ending here in Inception. I think that's a great one that, you know, lives on. People talk about that forever. You look for more emotional ones. Rocky, for me, the way that film ends and the crescendo of, you know, his peak in life. I think that way that ended was fantastic. Same with Honor Majesty's Secret Service. I'm a big James Bond guy, and the way that film ends is so different to every other Bond film that's out there. It really takes you by surprise. Two others, which are more of a twisty kind of things, is Memento. I love how that film sort of meets together in the middle, and you the way that you don't know what's happening, and you're feeling for Leonard as well, who's got short-term memory loss. You understand his plight throughout the film, and then when you get to that point, which, you know, the fact that the movie goes back and forth and back and forth and finally meets in the middle, and everything just comes together in this big reveal, it's like, wow, that is just ingenious how Nolan did that. And my last mention was Old Boy for that, just for that film in general and its insanity and everything that happens towards the end, that the initial twist there, and the more the ambiguous ending again of like what has actually happened with him, and do you believe what has actually happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I'll say, Christopher Nolan, you were talking about earlier with Memento, he knows how to end a movie. He is really good on the endings. I agree with Inception as well. So to round out my top 10, I'll just go through them real quick and then see if you, because some of them are going to be divisive. So give it to me, man. My number 6 is Lost in Translation.
Yep, that's fine. That's a good ending.
Are you okay with it? Okay. I didn't know. We're talking about ambiguous endings, right? So
no, I like how that ended.
It still bothers me that I don't know what he said to it. But I also like that it bothers me, and I like that I don't know. I just love Scarlett Johansson. I love Bill Murray, and Sofia Coppola has remained one of my favorite kind of like visionary filmmakers. So I know it's a divisive pick, but I love Lost in Translation, and I like that ending.
Nice.
My number 7 would have been Silence of the Lambs.
Ooh,
Hannibal
yeah.
Lecter kind of getting the upper hand and calling her on the payphone.
Yeah, having an old friend for dinner.
Yep.
Nice.
Number 8, Shawshank Redemption.
I think it's great.
Probably one of the most feel-good ones, at least. And talk about redemption at the end there between, again, Morgan Freeman and this time Tim Robbins.
Yep.
My number 9 would have been my favorite horror film of the decade, which is The Witch by Mr. Robert Eggers. Black Phillip and the culmination of that kind of demon possession that we get to witness in the climax of that movie. Are you a fan of The Witch or no?
No, I just saw it recently for the latest October when I did my 31 Days of Horror. And yeah, it wasn't the film for me.
I get that. I hear that a lot, man. I hear that a lot. And it's okay. I mean,
which is weird because I just watched The Lighthouse, Robert Eggers' new film, and I thought that was great.
I loved it. Yeah. That one's going to be in my, spoiler alert, but it's going to be in my tops of 2019 for sure.
Nice.
But yeah, I love his type of filmmaking. And in The Witch, man, that lasts like 10 minutes. Is intense. Everything kind of comes to a head there. And then my number 10 you already mentioned would have been The Usual Suspects. So that would have rounded out my top 10. All right, so real quick, man, we're going to open up the suggestion box and head over to social media, and let's see what some fans had to say, because they mentioned some that we haven't touched on yet. And I want to see what you think. We'll just go through a few of them real quick. These guys are great to give us feedback every week. Thank you so much. Chris Yaney over on Facebook said Shane, which is another Western, and I didn't know it, but it's from 1953. Do you know Shane?
I do know Shane. I haven't seen it though.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't even know it, and he fortunately put up the clip for me, like the YouTube clip, and it's a really emotional clip of this, I guess this outlaw kind of befriended this young kid, and then they have to kind of leave each other at the end, and it's a clip of him kind of yelling for Shane to come back, and it's very emotional, especially if you think of it in terms of the 50s. Let's see. Our friend Michael Hill over on Facebook said Logan.
Yeah, and I feel like Logan, from when you were talking about Shane then, I feel like from memory, there's a lot of Shane references in Logan. So I think that's where I got my memory of Shane from. But Logan, 100%, like that ending is fantastic.
Absolutely, man. I agree. And then Phil Rude said the Royal Tenenbaums funeral scene. What do you think of that? Are you a fan of Wes Anderson?
We did the entire Wes Anderson series on our Patreon a couple of years ago, and I think Royal Tenenbaums was my second favorite of the Wes Anderson films, and that ending's pretty quality.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a huge fan of his. I have a lot of friends that just love his work. I mean, I think it's okay. I've never.
Oh, there's
seen
some stinkers. He did some stinkers.
Yeah, I love The Life Aquatic is probably my favorite.
Oh, no, that's terrible. Sorry, Joe.
I know, I love that one. I think it's Bill Murray. I got to be honest, I think it's Bill Murray.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean,
whenever he's in something, I'm like, this is great, even though people are like, what? That sucked. I just can't get past my Bill Murray affinity, I guess. But let's see. Caleb from Netflix as well, you know him.
Caleb.
He said The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Yeah,
absolutely, no question. Although he does put The Thing on every list we do.
That's true.
He fits it into every like category.
Well, it's such a good movie, you can fit it on almost every category.
That's true, yeah.
Top 60s films, The Thing, got it.
Now, you're not going to be surprised by this either, I don't think. And I'm actually trying to remember the ending right now as I'm about to read it to you. But Justin from the Epic Film Guy says Batman 89. That's his favorite film of all time, so I'm not
that
surprised.
Makes sense.
But what's the end? Oh, I guess it's him and Joker at the like clock tower.
It has to be,
whatever,
doesn't
right?
it?
Yeah. I guess that's what he means.
Yeah.
I can't argue with that. That's a classic film. Tony Vandenbush over on the Facebook page said The Godfather.
Oh,
are you
yeah.
a fan of the Godfather films?
Yeah, absolutely. That ending, the door shut, it's iconic.
Yep, the office fade out, and our friend Aaron Tucker pointed that out. That is a great call, and I agree. Chrissy from So I Married a Movie Geek, good friend of the show, love her. She said Romeo and Juliet, specifically Baz Luhrmann's.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can't say no to that.
Be careful. Chrissy's an icon. Don't. I agree with everything she says. Well, we're talking about So I Married a Movie Geek, and then over on Twitter, Justin said the ending to There Will Be Blood, What do you think about that?
Fantastic ending. I love how you remember that, right? Yeah, yeah, There'll Be Blood is an amazing film, and the way that ends, you know, he's got to drink his milkshake for sure.
That's right. Talk about an acting clinic in that film, by the way. Yeah. Wow. Netflix and Swill has got four really, really good ones on here. And I don't know if he knew this, but Dan listed all horror. But he's got Midsommar, Hereditary, The Thing, and Ready or Not. Did you see Ready or Not this year?
I did see Ready or Not. Yeah, that's a fun little ending. I didn't think that's where it was going to go in the end, and it happened. I was like, okay, yep, that's interesting. Yeah. Wouldn't put it on anyone's top endings, but the other three were quality choices there, Dan.
Yeah, I won't give anything away, spoilers for Ready or Not, but I just love how it just turned into just bloodbath insanity at the end there. So I agree with that, though. That was a lot of fun. Well, here's another one that's going to be literally zero surprise to you. I love Paul. He just came on and did our top five movies of the decade from the countdown. But guess what? Do you want to guess what he put?
It's not Train to Busan, is it?
I know, right? That's actually the second thing I would have guessed. But it's Inception. And he put up the little top spinning there.
Oh, yeah. You can't say no to Inception.
Yeah, he loves Inception. And I agree with him. That's a good one. The Jack of Trades podcast over on Twitter said Warrior. I love that film, but I don't know. I remember the ending. Remind me of the ending.
That ending is fantastic. The way the two brothers, you know, basically end their beef in the UFC fight. I love Warrior, and that ending is fantastic.
Awesome. I wish I could remember the ending. I just haven't seen it since it came out, but I did love that movie. I think that one might end up creeping its way onto our sports movies list when we do that one in March. Real Reviews TV over on Twitter. They comment every week. Thank you so much, guys. But they have a GIF of Pattinson in the lighthouse. And yep. I don't want to give away any spoilers for what actually happens, but I did love that end scene with the sound mixing and Pattinson's face just glowing in the light. And
I must admit, I did have to do some research after that film to understand what the hell was going on. But once I realized, you know, it added on to everything I loved about the film already. And yeah, good ending.
Just crazy, man. Just such a manic, just beauty in that film. Shawshank Redemption by our good friend Gidget Von LaRue.
Nice.
She put up a gif of them meeting on the beach there.
Good
pick. I agree with that. Cinema Guys agrees with you in terms of the usual suspects.
Cool.
Like that. And there's I love Twitter. I prefer Twitter to Facebook, but I hate when people put up GIFs of movies I don't know.
Yeah, so without telling you what it is.
So I apologize to the top five podcasts, but they put up a GIF here and I don't know what it is. But I want to give them a shout out because they're always giving us feedback. Nick from the Epic Film Guy says about Schmidt.
I haven't seen it.
I've seen it, but it's been so damn long that I don't remember it. But he's got a GIF of Nicholson breaking down crying. So I assume that's the ending.
I'm gonna get some hate mail from Nick now. You gotta see about Schmidt. All right, Nick.
I get hate mail from him every week, man. I love getting hate mail from Nick. It's my favorite thing. I'll just mention a couple more here. I do love this movie. Death by Film podcast mentioned The Wrestler featuring Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
The ending of that film.
Yeah, another great ending. Movie.
And let's see. Let's just do one more here. Movie Chatter podcast over on Twitter said The Mist.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Depressing. But that is intense ending.
Yeah, I watched that for the horror October recently, and I knew the ending, but it still was very impactful, and the film was really good.
Absolutely, man. So thank you so much, guys, for entering your picks into the suggestion box this week. We appreciate it. Daniel from The Movie Journey has been my guest. We've been talking about our top five movie endings. Daniel, I hope you and or Dean will be back on soon, but until then, tell everyone where they can find you guys, man.
You can search for us on Twitter. We are at The Movie Journey. You can check us out on Facebook. Just search for The Movie Journey. We've got a little private listener discussion group there that's going on. Just go to our regular Facebook page and you'll find it there. Basically, all the regular podcast catches, we're everywhere out there. Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, we are there. Just search for The Movie Journey.
Yeah, and guys, make sure you check them out. They're a lot of fun, especially if you like movies. Give them a try, man, because they're a blast. I enjoy listening to you guys every week, buddy.
Thanks, man.
And all your info will be in the show notes for everyone, too. So for Daniel, this is Gerald signing off. That was our top five movie endings. We'll be back next week with a brand new top five for you guys. Daniel, thanks so much, man. I'll talk to you soon.
No worries, mate.
Thank you for listening. Two Peas is an independent podcast. We rely on donations from our executive producers in order to release new content weekly. We would like to give a special thanks to all of our current producers, Kathy Ross, Dan Brennick, Caleb Brownlee, Justin Esquivel, and Paul Chomo. If you would like to become an executive producer and help us continue to release great content, please visit 2peasonapod at patreon.com or check out the show notes for this episode. Again, we sincerely thank you for listening.